Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
This podcast is a proud member of the Quite the Thing Media Network.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube we're touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy. First off, thank you very much for the feedback on the most recent interview with Stephen Bassett. Again, I'm doing air quotes, I think, when I say interview, because that was Stephen Bassett talking for several hours and me directing the conversation as best I could. I've got my guest for the show tonight laughing on camera here as I say that, because we're talking about it off air. And Stephen was great to speak to, but yeah, he was just a million miles an hour. But thank you so much for all the feedback. And I'll definitely speak to Stephen far more prepared down the line one day. On the show with me, though, I have, well, an author, host of his own podcast, TV personality, lecturer, bartender, you know, and many more things to add to that as well. I've got Ryan Sprague, host of Somewhere in the Skies. Ryan, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. Hey, I do magic, too. I don't think I ever shared that with you. I used to do a little sleight of hand illusions when I was younger. So we can add that to the resume, too, I guess.
Yeah, podcast magic doesn't work that well, especially in an audio format. It would just be me going, oh, yeah, he done it. Yep, that was good. Yeah,
I promise. He made it disappear. Yeah.
Yeah, he made it look like a pyramid when it was actually a triangle. Yeah, but we'll get there. But listen. Yeah. What I want to say is this: Ryan's stuck with me, so we have just recorded the preview interview for his Contact in the Desert appearance. Go and check that out, and check out Contact in the Desert as well. But this is the main podcast for our Friday show. First off, I want to say a massive congratulations, Ryan. 4 million downloads and counting just recently as well. That is a little ripple of applause from myself. When did you start Somewhere in the Skies now? I mean, it must seem like a lifetime ago, but how long has it been?
Oh, thanks, brother. So I started the podcast, I believe it was in November of 2017, I want to say. I remember I was getting ready to move, actually, not too long before that, to Los Angeles, before I started the podcast. So I was starting out, I didn't know how it was going to go, if anyone would listen, I didn't know. I was very fortunate to have Richard Dolan is my first guest, so that really helped me out, get some street cred. But some, you know, 200 and something episodes later, and I can't even begin to tell you, man. Like, I never in my wildest dreams thought people would care about what I have to say about UFOs or what I could really contribute to the topic in podcast form. I just wanted to interview people who I found interesting, and apparently other people felt the same way, and I've just had an incredible support system along the way, and that includes you and a lot of your listeners who listen to both of our shows. And thank you for that. It's been a lot of hard work, as you know. Podcasting is a second job. if not a third and fourth and fifth job as well. So I don't know how you can have kids, man. I don't even have kids and I can barely do the podcast myself. So yeah, it's been a wild ride.
I think my wife would ask that same question. So yeah, it's definitely a second, third, fourth and fifth job as well. But that's, I always say that's our problem and not other people's. And the people, it's hard, I think, sometimes for them to realise that we're not always on our social media accounts as much as our phones might be in our hands these days. And like I'll be responding to people while the kids are playing in the background or emailing, or I'll be editing shows. Like my wife was, as people might know, my wife's due to give birth in a few weeks. I was editing a show outside one of her appointments the other day when I sat with my laptop in the car.
It was a true podcaster through and through.
Absolutely. And I was just like editing, clipping. Yep, cool. That'll be good to go later on. And then because I'm not allowed in because of COVID, so I have to sit outside. So but that's the kind of things you do. But that's about me. It's not about you.
Can I hop in there, brother? There was a photo on Facebook I saw, just to kind of piggyback off of that. This guy, he was getting ready to record a podcast episode. I don't know what his podcast was about, but he lost power in his home. And internet and everything. And he knew he had to get this done. Like he had a schedule, he stuck to it. So he went to a Burger King that had power, went in there, set up his mini studio in one of the booths in the Burger King and recorded it right there at the restaurant. So that's dedication and that's what it takes. Like if you got to do it in the waiting room when your wife is given labor, like that's what you got to do. That's what you got to do. Make for an interesting episode, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I'm sure that guy who recorded in Burger King, it was a Whopper episode. So yeah, that's nice. Is good. I like that. that's the only pun you'll get on this one, folks. Have you had any highlights in your time as well of recording all those shows, like 200? And obviously Richard Dolan is a massive one to start off with. But have you had any particular ones that stand out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Elizondo one. I know you and I had him on around the same time, and you and I were like texting back and forth, like, "What are you going to ask him? Okay, what are you going to ask him? Oh, why don't you do that? This, that. And I was so nervous, man. And I remember talking to him on the phone before the interview, and that really put me at ease. He was so nice and like accommodating. He was like, "Ask me anything you want. Whether I can answer it or not is another question." But you know, like he did that whole "I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy caught up in all this," you know, sort of thing. And that did put me at ease and kind of demystified the whole, you know, Elizondo intelligence guy thing. But you know, a couple weeks right before that, I had Avi Loeb, which I know you have as well, and that was a big one for me too. I didn't know how popular that guy actually was until I saw the numbers come in after the episode and just how much of a gentleman he was. That was probably one of my favorite interviews because I had no idea what to ask this guy. Basically, I went in being like, "What's Oumuamua? Tell us." And it kind of went from there and it was an amazing conversation. But yeah, I've had some fun ones in the past, some clunkers, some winners. I remember I had Dean Eliotto on, the filmmaker, to talk about his found footage film, the alien abduction or Incident at Lake County, which was really popular in the 90s on Fox. This actually came before Blair Witch Project, so it was one of the actual first found footage films about a family being abducted by aliens.
That's not the McPherson tape.
Yes. So he made the original called the McPherson tape. And then it kind of faded into obscurity. And then it started circulating around the UFO community. People thought it was real. And they said, "We found a lost tape of a family being abducted by aliens." Little did they know, actually, Dean remade this thing for television. I believe it was UPN, a station here in the U.S., who bought the rights and they remade it and put it on television. And that's what I saw. I saw the updated, more Hollywood version on UPN. And still, people thought that the McPherson tape was real, even though they had remade it with actors. So they thought it was a big cover-up thing. So I talked to Dean all about the two versions of the film, how people to this day still believe the McPherson tape is real. the power of belief. But the funny thing is, I interviewed with him for 2 hours, man, and I don't know if this has happened to you. The file just completely disappeared off my computer. I tried everything. And I was just heartbroken. It was an amazing conversation. I didn't want to go to him and be like, sorry, let's re-record this. So I didn't know what to do. But I finally told him, you know, what was up, and he was so nice. We recorded it again the following day, and it was just that much better. So that was one of my most memorable ones as well.
Do you know, I remember watching the McPherson tape as a kid. It was like one of those nights I had a friend staying over, and I was going to try not to do this, but he was staying over to watch a wrestling pay-per-view that was on at that was on at 1 a.m. UK time, which they normally were. And we were in the sitting room and with blankets down and stuff, and you're just trying to stay awake when you're in the UK for wrestling pay-per-views. You guys have got it lucky in the States,
lucky,
where it's 7 p.m. and 5 p.m. and whatnot for different time zones. But yeah, we were always 1 a.m. starts for a 4-5 a.m. finish. So you're trying to stay awake and fight that awkward phase where you're normally going to sleep. And we were flicking through the movie channel at the time, Sky Movies at the time, and it came up. And I remember it was like, it just looked really weird because, like you say, it was found footage. I saw it after the Blair Witch, but like you say, it was made before. And I just always remember the scene where they're running through the house, and it's all in a house out in the kind of wood, basically. It's kind of closed off locale, and they're in a bedroom, and basically they're trying to escape because these little greys have eventually ended up in the house. Yeah. And they're in the room with the camera, and the room's dark in darkness, but you can see the light from the hallway, and the door slams shut, and you just catch a glimpse of one of the greys standing behind the door.
Behind the door.
And I remember being terrified of that. And it proper chilled me, even though when you watch it and you're like, it has credits at the end. So, you know, that should give away that, yeah, this isn't actually found footage. But there was still that little bit in my head as a kid, like, oh, that could have been real. Like, that could have been real.
Yeah,
Dad,
absolutely.
Played by, you know,
and I still, to this day, it still gives me chills when I watch it. I think it was so well done. And again, Dean was the pioneer in found footage. Like, no one had really done it before. So he kind of went in, you know, not nowadays with found footage, there's a strict formula and everyone knows where to put the camera, how to do this. He was just going off, you know, flying by the seat of his pants. And it became a sort of a cultural icon. You talk about anyone about the McPherson tape and they kind of know what you're talking about. And, you know, to this day, there are people who believe it was real. But you know what that scene is when the aliens are invading the home? He told me that was directly inspired by the Hopkinsville Goblin case of this family who were attacked in their farmhouse back in, what was it, the 50s or early 60s, maybe? Hopkinsville Goblin case, I don't recall. But he said, yeah, it was directly inspired by that. And then you would go to see similar things happen in things like Signs by M. Night Shyamalan, like this idea of an enclosed space being invaded by aliens with one family. So, yeah, I think he really set the standard and paved the way for a lot of those films.
If people haven't seen it, it's one of those, like, stick on with some friends that are into the subject as well. Maybe don't sit down with a wife, no friend, boyfriend, husband, partner, kids. It's find someone who else who likes the subject or the topic and watch it with them. It's probably a bit of fun to do that. But listen, that's good to hear some of those highlights. People can dive into your archive and check out Somewhere in the Skies. You've got the YouTube channel as well, and also the Patreon, and we'll give all those details away at the end, and they'll be in the links for the description too. Since we last spoke, Ryan, you've also got involved with The Debrief, and I just wanted to find out a little about how did that come about, because you've written a few articles for them now, and has it been what you expected when you first got involved?
Yeah, so I mean, I'd been writing freelance for a while now. I kind of got my start in the UFO journalism world early on with Open Minds, back when they had a print magazine. It was beautiful. I mean, we're talking like a 60, 70 page magazine monthly, just gorgeous images and articles written by very renowned researchers throughout the world. And I gave it a try. I pitched a story to them. They accepted it. And I think I ended up doing about 9 or 10 articles in the run of their magazine, which was amazing. I really got to stretch my muscles when it came to writing, because I was strictly a playwright before that, you know, just writing for the stage here in New York City. And I wanted to get more involved in the UFO community. And I thought, okay, I'm definitely a writer. That's what I know I like to do. So let's give it a try. And ever since then, I've written for other various magazines in the US, in the UK. And yeah, it kind of teetered out after Open Minds closed down their magazine. I didn't really have an outlet for that. So I started writing independently on Medium, you know, the big website where you can publish your own stuff, and got hooked up with Bryce Zabel over there. So he's got kind of his own literary digital magazine going on, and it's awesome. I still write over there when I can. And then I had heard rumblings of this new organization, and I knew the owners, obviously. So that was kind of my in. I was on really good terms with all those guys over there at the Debrief. And I had no idea if they were looking for writers, if anything I had to say was worth, you know, being on the Debrief. But I gave it a try. And it was kind of just like Open Minds. They said, pitch us something. I did. And then, lo and behold, I'm about 20 articles in over there. So it's been an incredible ride. It's I will say this. It really challenged my writing style. There's a very strict format at the Debrief, if anyone has noticed. And that was hard for me because I'm a very freewielding writer. And especially with playwriting, you just kind of go organically. But this is very strict journalism, Debrief does. And they hold themselves to very high standards. And I respect that. So it's been a big lesson for me, for sure.
Is that something they gave you from the start, that we have standards we're going to have and we have a tone? Now, I don't think it's unfair to say, as the Debrief, and this word's going to come up a few times in the podcast, hyped its arrival. Tim and Micah and MJ were talking about this organization was coming, and people maybe heard for a few days beforehand. Once we got the name of it, people started following the account, and we had the little countdown video, and it went online. The majority of the followers and people waiting on it are interested in UFOs, UAPs. That was going to be the attraction. Is that how it was, if the word is sold to you or pitched to you, that they were going to be going down that route? Or was it always a case of that we've got all these different avenues we're going to look at, and one focus will be UFOs? Or will it be the primary focus and audience will be UFO, UAP?
So I know for a fact that when the Debrief first came around, the idea was actually Micah Hanks, who is the brainchild behind the entire project. And if anyone knows Micah, he has many different interests, not just UAP. And he said flat out when he got hooked up with Tim and MJ, and I don't think I'm sharing too much about like how it all formed. They've talked very publicly about this. They said, cool, yeah, let's cover UFOs when we can, but it has to be to the standard that we would have everything else on the website. We have to vet sources. We have to fact check. I mean, these articles go through rigorous editing and vetting before anything goes to print. I can say that for a fact. And I mean, I'm a UFO guy, Andy, and I've only written two UFO articles at the Debrief. So no, UFOs are not their main focus. It never was intended to be. I think when people saw who was involved and that we were kind of writing about UFOs, that's what it was going to be, the new kind of outlet for that. But it is not. It's a very small part of what the Debrief does and stands for. But hey, UFOs have kind of been exploding lately. So of course, we're going to cover it. And we have members like Tim who have very deep connections, and we're going to use that as much as we can. And I'm very happy and that I don't get to just talk about UFOs. I get to talk about whatever I find of interest and bring to the Debrief. And they might say, nah, not for us, or no, Ryan, that's really stupid. We're not covering that, or too outlandish, to be honest. There's things I brought to them and they're like, nope, you can't verify that whatsoever. We're not doing it. And I really respected that.
Before we get to talk about the last 7 to 10 days and what's gone on, because I want to hear your thoughts on it, and a lot of the listeners were saying that as well, I want to talk about the debrief's first big article. I know they had a few on like the Fast Walker stuff, and there's been some great stuff on there as well on modern military technology and breakthrough technologies and the science field. There's a lot of great content on there, and I check it out myself. So want to talk to you about the debrief, one of their first big articles on UFO UAP that broke, and we got a picture of what at the time, and this has only just changed recently, but it was known as the Batman balloon. We had a picture that was taken from a fighter pilot's point of view on what we now know as an iPhone 8, I believe we now know as much detail as that, of an object that appears to be hovering at an altitude that it was quite a distance away from the aircraft. However, when you zoom in, it had a quite unique shape. Now, this, I saw it, that I was waiting, I was refreshing like everyone else was that day, you know, bang, 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 F5. And eventually the article comes up and you get this picture and you get some of the details behind it, and it was incredible. And things blew up very, very quickly, though, because we're in 2020 and 2021 with their social media. People pinned that it was very close, if not the exact shape, of a kid's Mylar party balloon, a Batman balloon. And it seemed to, I don't want to say let the air out, because that would be another pun, and I said I wouldn't have any more puns, but it let the air out the story slightly, because it did look really similar. And then all of a sudden, we had loads of, you know, experts, air quotes, jumping on saying that those balloons can't go to that height, those balloons can go to that height. Well, if it was filled with hydrogen, it can get to that height, but why would a kid's balloon fit in? It all just blew up. Now, what were your initial thoughts or take on that article and the content we got in it? And have your thoughts changed over time? Obviously not to get into what we're about to talk about from the last week or so.
Yeah. So I was just like you, man. Like, I didn't know much about the article before it came out, the Transmedium one. And, you know, they were pretty tight-lipped about it. A lot of us other contributors at the debrief had no idea it was coming either. And Tim had been working on that article for almost a year. So, I mean, for anyone to say, like, he just kind of whipped it together, you know, it was meant to disinform the public. Like, I know for a fact it wasn't. I know that they vetted their sources extremely well. And we got reports from the UAP task force. Like, there's no getting around that. Someone wanted these things out to the public. Why? I don't know. Only Tim might know the answer to that, or he might not. You know, that article came out, it was really, it made a big splash. And then the following day, they came out with the photo of the quote-unquote Batman balloon. So I remember the minute it went on, of course, like the server crashed and a lot of people were pretty upset about that. But again, the debrief is a very small operation and they were not expecting the kind of traffic they got. It's a good problem to have, for sure. And once I saw it, I had to really zoom in, and I can't pretend that I was like amazed, or I thought that is a craft from Zeta Reticuli. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was compelling, but I hope most people wouldn't immediately say, "Yep, that's an alien craft." To me, it did. It looked like some sort of Mylar balloon. And that's kind of what I went with. And I remember, you know, the Transmedium article came out and I was having the three members of the debrief on my podcast that night to talk about the article the following day. And that's when they dropped the photo. So I was going into this interview right as they had dropped the photo. And now I had this whole new thing we had to bring into the conversation. So I asked the guys, I'm like, what do you think it is? You posted it. And all of them said the same thing. We don't know. The person who sent us this does not know. And it very well could be some sort of balloon. So, you know, a lot of people said that debrief had hyped it up and that they were making more of it than it actually was. You know, the only defense I could say is Tim is one of the biggest skeptics about it. And he's the one who published it. So I don't know, man. Like you said, experts came out of the woodwork in both camps saying it was a balloon. It was not. It wouldn't make it up to that elevation. It would be blowing in the wind. It wouldn't be standing still. And every argument is viable because we don't have enough data to know what happened. And that's what's most frustrating when it comes to these leaks or these sources is, you know, we just don't have enough information to make any opinion. I don't care if you're Mick West or you're someone who thinks it is a craft from another planet. Like, we don't know because we don't have enough to go off of. You cannot make a determination by one photo or 8 seconds of a pyramid video. I'm sorry.
That was when I done my Room 101 Christmas special show, and you got involved in that as well, Ryan. Sean Cahill's Room 101 was he wanted to get rid of one source evidence, because that was his very point, that if you have a photo or just a video or a piece of witness testimony on its own, it doesn't really mean anything because there's so little to verify it with. What you need is the photo or the video and the testimony to go along with it and the radar data and the pilot to go on, you know, what they saw, and then someone else to come on, and then this other system data to, and I totally appreciate that. And we've seen this even happen again as recent as last week. So George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell started tweeting it was going to be a good week for UFO news, it looked like, and very quickly people jumped on board with the please stop hyping things up. People don't like hype. I don't see anything wrong, and I think hype's the word because in a way it is hype, but you're letting people know that something's going to be coming out rather than just drop it in the middle of nowhere. That's what you do. Movie companies don't just release a movie and no one knows it's coming. You get teaser trailers and you get announcements and interviews beforehand, and same with articles. You're just letting people know that. And it's work they've done as well. People forget that, whether it's Tim McMillan, yourself, Mike at MJ, The Debrief, The New York Times, you know, a news show. There's work that goes in behind the scenes, and you want the fruition of your work to get as many eyes and ears or whatever it may be as possible on that. So I've got no issue with that. And I think what they've done, it was very quick as well. George Knapp let us know that a piece of news was coming. What then very quickly followed was a follow-up to that Debrief article where we got another frame. It's not the same picture of the Batman balloon. I believe it's another frame forward on it. And then we've got another picture of what became known as the sphere or jellyfish, a more rounded camera artifact-looking picture. And the final one was the metallic blimp. I'm getting those right in my head. What were your thoughts then when you see George Knapp releasing those images? Obviously, it's a follow-up to a pretty recent story.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was really interesting. I mean, again, like we had the quote-unquote Batman balloon photo, and that's all we had to work off of. Now we know that there were other photos taken in that cockpit on that day in the same time period. So we can't really say it was just this one thing, because we're now looking at three different objects taken around the same time. I think we've since learned they are separate objects, at least one or two of them are. But I thought they were compelling. But again, like, and this is no fault against George Knapp. His reporting is, in my opinion, extremely well done. And he gave us all he could, all he was told at this meeting where he obtained these photos, with a very interesting source, I might add, Robert Bigelow, who was in possession of these photos and was giving a presentation, I believe, to members of the UAP task force. So I think that's the biggest mystery in all of this, is why is Robert Bigelow now involved in this again in 2019 when supposedly he'd gotten out of it a while ago? I think that's a question people have to ask themselves, is, wow, like, this is where this is coming from. Robert Bigelow, really interesting. As for the photos themselves, again, I don't like to really make a determination either way because we don't have enough data. I mean, for me, the blob or the orb to me looks like a very severely out of focus photo. And a lot of people have made that observation. As for the other two, could be a balloon, could be a interdimensional craft from another place. I don't know, man. I honestly don't know. But these are the photos that the UAP task force are looking at. And that also says something. Like, why were these photos given to us as the public? And what role did these photos play within the task force? Like we've heard, these were shown to people in Congress, in the task force, to determine, like, can we make sense of these? Kind of used as an example of, can you identify that? No? Okay, that's a problem. Like, we should probably show it to someone else. So they were kind of used as tests. So I do have to wonder, were these very simple, prosaic objects, and they wanted to see how members of the task force responded to them? Or are they legitimately unidentified phenomena? I can't tell you. It's very revealing that these photos, the videos coming forward in the past week or so, that they were shown in briefings and were used as examples. If those are the examples, what else is out there that they're looking at?
What I would like to think is if they are using them as some sort of test of as prosaic objects, that what we don't see is that, okay, so if you think those are balloons, then what's this? And that's when they pull out the slides and the videos and the footage that we don't see, which is the more eye-opening stuff that has senators and congressmen and congresswomen coming out of meetings going, ah, okay, this maybe is something we should be looking at. And
yeah, I would have to agree with you.
I totally get people's frustrations. I have to say that, Ryan, because I get where people will be like, yeah, but we should have this and we should have that. But I also get that who are we to ask for classified data and systems information and what's enough, how much is enough? And some people won't like to hear that, but there comes a point when we're getting all of this that we're getting, and maybe it's still a little divisive for a reason. Again, and you touched on the footage that we got, Jeremy Corbell, 24 hours after the George Knapp release, said there was more stuff coming. He announced at 12 p.m. PST or 8 p.m. UK that there was going to be some more stuff dropping, and boom, at that time we get the footage of the triangular UFO from eyewitnesses. It's apparently pyramid-shaped UFOs. We've had Dave Beattie putting out a WhatsApp message screenshot saying he spoke to someone who said their brother-in-law saw it and it wasn't pyramid-shaped. So again, it's all he said, she said, and hearsay and screenshots. And what I find funny is we're getting all this official stuff put out, and I'll use official in air quotes again, that is really interesting to look at. And I think people like us are looking at it going, wow, and we're not hoping to see something interesting, but if taking it to face value, if this stuff is unidentified, then that's really interesting. But people don't see that as enough to find it fascinating. Yet it just takes one person to do an experiment on a bit of rope, or with their blinds opening and closing in their room, or for someone to show a screenshot of a message for someone saying, nope, I know someone's brother-in-law saw it and they said it wasn't a pyramid UFO, and people are quite happy to go, yep, see, there you go, someone said it wasn't. Why is that enough to debunk and poo-poo it, yet the other stuff isn't enough just to look into it?
Mm-hmm. It's not enough. I personally feel that anyone debunking the video that Jeremy Corbell brought forward, they don't have enough to make that determination. I find some of the arguments extremely compelling and convincing. I can say that. I do think that some of the people in this community that we look at as skeptics or debunkers have very valid arguments. But also, at the same time, we don't know. Like you mentioned earlier, we don't have the context. Jeremy really did the best he could with what he was given. And I do give him credit. You know, he gave as much context to the video as he possibly could. And I respect that, because that's more than a lot of people do when they, you know, they try to drop something sensational. And the video, it's interesting. It really is. But now the hard questions really start. Who gave this to Jeremy Corbell? Why did they give it to him? And for what purpose? And why are these people leaking these things to the debrief, to George Knapp, to Jeremy Corbell? What is the motivation for giving these stuff to the public prior to this UAP task force report in June? Like, is this some rogue intelligence person who wants this stuff to get out there because they know it wouldn't in the classified report? Or, you know, is this some test and disinformation? I can't say it's not. We simply do not know. And that's hard. That's hard when you're working with anonymous sources. It's frustrating. And I understand it's frustrating for people looking at the video, people reading the articles on the debrief when it says anonymous source. That's an argument that's been around since the dawn of journalism. But it's tough, man. I think it's exciting. Man, it got people excited. The pyramid video is, you know, making it across the pond. It's making it all over the place now. So if anything, it's getting the UFO topic out there. It's getting more eyes on it. And maybe we can find answers to it. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting. I find both sides of the argument valid on what it could be, what it couldn't be. But yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
What's your gut telling you, Ryan? If you're looking at that triangle video flashing across now, and you know what I'm getting at here, I won't even use the word alien, right, because it might not be, but are you looking at something you feel just you must lean one way or another that's probably human tech, or is it that something else?
I might get heat from Corbell, who is a friend of mine, because I know he feels differently, but again, he might know more than we do. I look at the photos released by Knapp. I look at the video released by Corbell, and my gut is telling me that this is unknown technology from this planet. I do firmly believe that. Now, you know, we can talk to our faces blue about it's not Russia, it's not China, but we don't know that. We simply do not know that. What I saw in the video, the blinking lights kind of gave me pause. It made me think that this might be a conventional aircraft of some sort, whether it's a drone or something. I don't know. But again, we need more context. And again, Jeremy tried. He really did. He gave us all the information he could about where it happened, who took the video, why it was a cell phone of another camera, like all of those reasons, which Dan brought up in an episode of yours as well, which was very spot on. Like a lot of people are like, why is it like a cell phone? It's like, because that's what they were doing to capture it from another camera. Otherwise, it would probably be classified and we would never have seen it. Yeah. But now it's the property of that person who took the video. So, yeah.
I tell you, I bet I would love to see the same tic-tac, gimbal and go fast videos. I would have loved if they had iPhone 8s for those to film. This and show me the footage on the iPhone 8, not the FLIR cameras, not on anything else. Show me that footage on those cameras just to see what it potentially was. And do you know what? People still wouldn't have been happy.
Andy. And I think that's what frustrates me most in this field. And I know it does a lot of people, that when Knapp comes out with something like this, or the debrief, or Corbell, whoever, it's never enough for people, and it never will be. Like, I wouldn't care if that video was 3 minutes long of a pyramid flying through the sky. More people would still find some way to poo-poo it. They simply will, just by the outlet that put it out. You know, Jeremy is a very steadfast guy in his ways, and he knows what he wants to say, and he's gonna say it. He doesn't give a crap what anyone thinks, and some people don't like that about him. And simply because this video came out from him, that's going to paint the perception of what he released to the public for some people. That's just the way it is. People who may not respect the work of George Knapp, they're gonna be extra hard on what he's releasing. And look, if you're going to put it out there, you got to be ready for that. And I think they were. I think they both did dynamite reporting on what they could with what they had. And that's the only sort of defense I would give to it. I think we don't have enough information, and we can't make a determination on what any of it is. We simply can't.
We've got the impending deadline for the potential, and I say now potential, UAP task force report coming. At some point, maybe in June, I'm using potential, maybe. Yeah. What were your thoughts when you first heard about the potential of a report, and have they changed to where they're at now as to what we may or may not get in June?
Yeah. When I first heard about it, I was really excited, as I think a lot of the community was. And we should be. I think people should still be excited. The fact that we're getting anything at any time, I think, is something to look forward to. But that doesn't mean, you know, that we're going to get anything potentially earth-shattering or the proof of disclosure we've always wanted. I think the reality of the situation is it's going to be, kind of just layering on top of what we already know about the Tic Tacs and the gimbals and the pyramids and everything in between. So I'm not expecting a lot, especially after that article came out in Politico by Brian Bender about how, you know, certain military branches and intelligence agencies were sort of stonewalling the UAP task force, who were going in saying, hey, like, you got to give us what you got on UFOs. And a lot of them straight up said, no, we're not going to do that. That was a little sobering when I read that, but that really put it into perspective. I don't think we should really expect much. I think we should be thankful for what we do get in some ways, and thankful for the reporting that is getting done on the topic with what we have. Again, whether it's Jeremy or Knapp or whoever, insert UFO journalist here. I think we should just be thankful that the topic is getting the coverage it is, and hopefully it's going to put pressure on the United States government to kind of up the ante. And we're not just going to accept, you know, we've seen a couple things, and it's nothing to worry about, because that clearly is not the case when you have stuff like this coming out.
Ryan, let's finish off with some listener questions. Again, thank you very much for your time. Obviously, we've recorded the preview, we've recorded this, and a little peek behind the curtain. Myself and Ryan have been talking about all kinds of things in between as well. And for a couple of people did actually ask about the wrestling chat. We'll save that for another time. thanks to
it's
those
happening.
Who did. Yeah, probably best keeping that one on Twitter just now, but maybe we'll do something down the line for wrestling fans. But Ryan, first up, one of the listeners, Dave here, saying, Ryan did a brilliant episode featuring the writer of The 11th Green, a film about Eisenhower meeting with ET ambassadors. I've still to see that. In my reading and the subject, including the book Ryan wrote a foreword to about Eisenhower's encounter, he thinks the writer was really well informed and he was getting some of his info from insiders. What's your view on the truth of the alleged Eisenhower encounter and the film's potential inside knowledge?
Well, thank you, first of all, whoever said that. That was a really fun interview with the filmmaker. The film is fantastic. For anyone who hasn't seen it, The 11th Green, I would highly suggest it. As a purely narrative standpoint, it was just a brilliant, structured film. It was really interesting. Whether you believe in the whole Eisenhower met with aliens story or not, the way that this filmmaker chose to tell the story and kind of mess with time and everything in between, I thought was really interesting. So I highly recommend the film. As for the book I wrote the foreword to by Paul Blake Smith, that was a bit more in the realm of reality when it comes to this whole thing. Paul is a very, very good researcher, especially when it comes to Eisenhower. I mean, we talked on this interview maybe for 40 minutes just about Eisenhower, not even about these alleged meetings with aliens or anything like that. And that's what I found most interesting. I didn't know much about Eisenhower before that. And I thought it was pretty cool to get a history of who this guy was, what kind of president and leader he was, and why, if there was going to be a president who met with aliens, he probably was one of the better ones that it had happened with. So where I personally stand on it, I don't know. I can't be convinced that it happened because there is absolutely no definitive proof of that. But I will say the reason I wrote the foreword to that book is because I think there is very compelling evidence that this author came up with. He also does not make a, you know, firm stance either way. He presents the facts, he presents the documents he's found, and he makes an argument for it. So it was one of my most highly downloaded episodes, the recent one with the author Paul Blake Smith. So clearly people are interested in the story, and it has had a very special place in UFO folklore for so long. And I thought it was fun. I thought it was a really cool interview, and I came out being like, huh, maybe something like this did happen. I don't know. I can't tell you, man, but that's up for the reader to decide, I think.
Same listener's got a little bit of a question on something he thinks he's picked up. So he says, I've noticed listening to Ryan for some time now that he's become less of an observer of and more of a commentator on UFOs and a little bit more of an activist. Do you think that's true, Ryan? And how do you see your journey in the subject up to now?
Ooh, interesting. I haven't heard that before. I guess it would depend on what they mean as an activist. I mean, I'm not a field investigator. You know, I'm not boots on the ground going out to every alleged crash site or UFO sighting to investigate. I'm what I consider a freelance journalist. I love covering the topic. I love writing about it. I love doing the podcast. So from observer to activist, the only thing I can think of in terms of that is my work with Lou over at the Big Phone Home and the Unidentified Celebrity Review. I thought what he's put together is incredible in the time that he's done it, the people he's got involved. And I think it's a very valiant effort to, you know, call your representatives and tell them to get interested in UFOs. Like, why not? You know, we tweet to them about everything else that they're doing right or wrong on Twitter every day. Why not tweet to them about, hey, UFOs, what do you think about it? We'd love to know. So I'm all for it. I think it's awesome. James Fox as well has put together the UAP Act now. UAP UK is killing it over there. I mean, the coverage in England right now with the stuff Jeremy Corbell's brought forward is amazing. I think all these groups coming together, I find it really invigorating. Again, these are young people excited about UFOs, and they want to get involved. So I think it's really cool. I'm all for it, and I'm all in. You know, rah, rah, let's do it. Let's call our representatives, and I'm trying here in New York. You know, we're trying. We got some scandals going on with our governor here in New York City right now that he's more worried about than UFOs, but that's a story for another time.
Yeah, I've seen that, keeping up to date with my US politics news, as we were talking about before. And from a UK point of view, I am involved with the Big Phone Home, same with some of my colleagues at UAP Media, and we are going to be holding the fort from a UK point of view on the day as well, with some more details to come forward from that, just talking to Lou Jimenez just now over the Twitter feed on what we're going to be doing on the day to kind of kick things off, because we are obviously up it's going to be later here, but earlier in the US, so we can kind of get things started while you guys are still getting out of bed basically in the morning. And I do have, do you know what, I'm going to have some of my Scottish listeners, Ryan, I have to pull you up when you said things from an English point of view, just given I'm Scottish, we're going to say UK. Yeah, damn. Ryan's making a face. I know there's going to be a few of the Scottish ones going, oh, I said England. And damn, I've got Welsh and Irish listeners too, so yeah, let's keep it.
Yeah, I know. I've probably lost a lot of your audience at this point then.
Listen, you're based in New York. You should know better with the Irish contingent you've got over there as well. So,
oh my God, man, it's insane. We've got Irish pubs every 2 feet here. I love it. I absolutely love it.
I remember from my time over there. Again, don't take me back. Ryan, here's a question for you you'll appreciate. As a stage writer, what is Ryan's view of the use of Hollywood and now streamed media like Netflix as a tool for disclosure by potentially factions within the Pentagon and intelligence communities who are secret keepers, basically?
Oh, that's a great question. I think there. Someone asked me the other day, they're like, what role does Hollywood play in all this? And I think it's actually an important question. I mean, we know for a fact that Hollywood is used for many recruitment things. I mean, I always go back to the whole Top Gun thing. You know, that movie was made specifically to get people to go into the Air Force. And I think they said something like a 50 to 60% increase in recruitments after that movie. Or you look at something like The X-Files.
And the Gulf War.
Yes, exactly, man. What was I? Oh, Dana Scully from The X-Files. You know, this scientist on television investigating all this weird stuff every week. Women weren't used to seeing that on, you know, primetime television. And I think after The X-Files, again, they said something like 80% increase in women getting involved in different scientific fields, like seeing, oh my God, I can do this. So she's become an icon for many people out there. So Hollywood has a very important role, I think, in all of this. We know certain UFO movies and stuff were made specifically with funding from the government or the military. Independence Day being one of them, was directly funded by the Air Force, and they kind of had a weird contention going on with the people at Area 51 at the time. Like, they were trying to sue the production. They said, you can't use Area 51 in this. And they're like, yeah, we're going to do it anyways. Again, story for another time. I think any sort of media, whether it's Hollywood, theater, music, any sort of art, has a very important place in all of this. I mean, look at how many artists are involved in the UFO topic. It's pretty cool. And I think that's because, a lot of them are not afraid to speak their minds, to express themselves. And this is a topic that a lot of people don't talk about because of the stigma and ridicule. But that's changing. I mean, look at all of these UFO shows out right now and movies and everything in between. It's more mainstream than it's ever been. So I think it's exciting. I think we're going to see a lot more UFO content coming out in the next couple years as the reality of the issue unravels before our eyes within the U.S. government and hopefully other governments. And I think it's cool. Again, it's just getting it out to more people, and I'm all for that. The struggle is always, you know, when do you separate the entertainment from the information? And that's hard. And, you know, when the television I've done, I went in saying, if I can just get as much credible information out there as possible, I feel like I've contributed something. But there will always be an entertainment aspect to it, and we can't escape that. But that's what the world is. We live in a world of entertainment 24/7. So, yeah, it plays a very important role.
Ryan, I think it's safe to say you've certainly contributed something to this field as well. Listen, we'll leave it there for this time, but you'll definitely be welcome back on any point with myself and just to come on and spitball and talk about whatever we can. How can listeners get in touch with yourself, Ryan? How can they find you? And obviously, I'll put the links to the book and everything within the description as well.
Oh, thanks, man. No, this was a blast. I love coming on and talking to you. Everything I do is at my one-stop shop, Somewhere in the Skies. .com. Somewhere in the Skies podcast releases every Monday. Wherever you get that UFO podcast, you can get Somewhere in the Skies. I think that's about it. I do a Patreon, bonus episodes. You want to hear Andy and I talk wrestling? I'm sure we'll do a bonus episode at some point about that. I do that. And then I have a YouTube channel as well where I'm trying to pump out more video content of interviews and case files. I have a series called Case Files. And that's it, man. I'm just always trying to do something, working on a new book. So you can keep up to date with me at somewhereintheskies.com.
That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's at UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
Yeah. It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rat. Meditated again and stayed full on meta. I can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. I'm like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.